This is Nash with Radio Dead Air. I've been given a few minutes to speak with Joseph Michael Linsner of Dawn, among other many other things, artist and writer. Thank you.
Oh, it's nice to be here.
Congratulations, 20 years of Dawn. This is Dawn's 20th anniversary. Started in 1989, now it's 2009. Congrats.
Yes, thanks. The first Dawn comic, Dawn first appeared in Cry for Dawn number 1, which first came out in December 1989. And that was 20 years ago, but it doesn't feel like it.
Is it strange to have that character still so predominant and still so recognizable in relation to your work?
Well, the punchline to everything is that Cry for Dawn number 1 was done as a one-shot. It was just going to be a one-shot anthology, which I was going to use almost as a business card to hopefully get work drawing, you know, something for one of the bigger companies. But it didn't work out that way, and it's funny how, you know, fate deals you these, you know, wild cards. I wasn't able to get me work at the major companies. However, it had legs of its own, and it led to my entire career. And I've been with Dawn for 20 years. And in the beginning, you know, people saw Dawn, and they, right out of the gate, they said, oh, what's our story? What's our story? And she didn't have a story. However, through the course of doing the 9 issues of Cry for Dawn, if you look at the covers of Cry for Dawn, a story started to evolve. And I was just coming up with images from the very bottom of my brain. And, with the covers of Cry for Dawn, I could do anything I wanted because it was an anthology, and the only connecting element was that Dawn had to be there in some context. And so this...
like the old e-comic, like e-horror comics with...
EC, yeah. Yeah, yeah, the... I love anthologies, and one of these days I'd love to get back to just doing an anthology because I'm very restless, and an anthology allows you to jump around and... you know, play with it, different styles and different formats. And,
But that does kind of lead into my next question. Dark Ivory.
Dark Ivory.
Very different kind of narrative style than before. It's very linear. It's kind of grounded. It even has fantastic elements. But it's very grounded in one person's normal sort of life. What was it like trying to... And it was continuous from issue to issue. What was it like trying to follow that kind of more traditional story?
Well, one of the things about Dawn is on purpose, like with extreme intent, I wanted certain elements to be ambiguous and esoteric with Dawn, because Dawn deals with a lot of, you know, world mythology and religion, and I don't want to, you know, drop anchors on any one point of view. But with Dark Ivory, it's a vampire story, and things are much more concrete, like, okay, vampires need blood, and there's a very regimented mythology already dealing with... like, there are rules of vampirism, which, you know, change from story to story, but the basic gist of vampire stories is very linear. And both myself and my collaborator on Dark Ivory, Ava Hopkins, we wanted to just tell a simple vampire story, which, you know, we still want to add layers to it, but basically it's a vampire story, and I love vampire stories, a lot of people love vampire stories, so didn't want things to be cloudy, just wanted to be direct and like, okay, here's a vampire story, this happens, this happens, this happens.
Did you know you were going to bring back the one-off character, vampire character from Cry for Dawn, back? Esk. Did you know you were gonna bring him back for Dark Ivory when you started?
With Esk, I started telling stories with him in Cry for Dawn, and then he had his big moment in the sun in The Vampire's Christmas, which was a big graphic novel with him, and it just kind of evolved. You know, Esk was like a completely unromantic vampire, but Dark Ivory is... the flip side of that, she's a completely romantic vampire. Like, she has bat wings, which is pretty much shunned upon in modern vampire stories. And between the two of them, I wanted to, like, see if we could, you know, find a middle ground between basically a romanticized vampire story and nuts and bolts, no fangs, just like a brutal, ugly vampire story. And I guess, ultimately, in Dark Ivory, it's a mix of the romantic and the ugly.
Well, you've brought Dark Ivory to Image. What's it like working at through Image Studios for this book?
Working with Image has been great because I come from a self-publishing background, and Image basically is a a parent company that works with a bunch of individual studios where they will, you know, produce the content of the book. They'll produce the content of the book, and then Image will take care of getting the book out there into the rest of the world. And I'm very comfortable with that. I've been nothing but happy with Image.
Now, and that leads into the mouse buying Marvel. You have any thoughts on the state of the industry right now with things going a little topsy-turvy?
That's crazy, isn't it? I remember reading that in my morning emails, Disney buys Marvel. It seems like the type of thing that never would have happened, but in a bigger sense, thinking about the bigger corporate picture, it makes perfect sense. Marvel's greatest asset is the fantastic characters that were created by, you know, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. And, you know, 40 years on, those characters still have fantastic things to offer to the public. So, in the bigger picture, I think Universal still has the contract for the, you know, people running around in Marvel suits for the next couple of years. But at some point, at Disney World, you're going to see Mickey Mouse standing there next to Spider-Man. And it seems to make a weird kind of sense because, you know, Spider-Man has already been in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. And, like, once upon a time, you only had Superman, you know, in things like that. And I think Disney buying Marvel is going to lead to the Marvel characters becoming more and more part of our national culture, the bigger picture.
So it doesn't worry you having a corporation like that in charge of one of the you know, it doesn't feel like the smaller guys are getting edged out.
That's been happening in many ways. In a lot of ways, that's tragic. Being a little guy, how does a little guy, how does a mouse fight a giant? And in this case, the giant is a mouse. All I know is that I'm just going to keep doing my comics and try to keep my nose out of the crossfire.
We just finished up Dark Ivory. What can we look for coming up next from you?
The next thing for me is a Dawn one-shot called Dawn Not to Touch the Earth, which is my take on an ancient Celtic myth, which I've been dying to do for years, and that'll be coming out in January 2010. And then after that, we'll finally be collecting Dark Ivory into a trade where we're going to remaster it and add a couple of pages, and that'll be out in the spring of 2010. And then after that, I'm going to see what fate holds.
Well, this has been Nash at the Radio Dead Air speaking with Joseph Michael Lindstrom. Thank you very much for your time this morning.
Hey, thank you. It's been good.
Let's head back to the studio.